What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We're live on Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube. We're live on Facebook. Maybe you're listening later on Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. It's all good. And folks, this is going to be a great show tonight. But I wanted to kick it off. Pete, what are you doing for Valentine's Day?
I'm doing this fucking thing, you asshole.
Okay. All right. That's right. I'm sorry.
Happy Valentine's Day to your wife.
That's a weird, very aggressive thing to say, but I'll definitely let her know. So thank you.
Yeah,
we should probably talk about our shirts. We're both wearing very romantic shirts tonight. I'm wearing my self-made Riverdale shirt with Kavangs.
Nice. So that's not available for people to buy. You just made it for yourself?
Club.com/threadless.
Okay, I was going to say.
Club. I honestly don't know the link, but you can get it right there. And Pete, you're wearing your Legend of Zelda shirt, which says it's dangerous to go alone, right?
That's right. That's right. Always have a squad with you when possible.
Mm. Oh, I was going for like the more romantic sense. Since it's Valentine's Day, it's dangerous to go alone. You got to couple up.
Like, it's a made-up holiday.
LinkedIn. Wow. Somebody's going real dark this week. You know who's not going dark? And then we'll bring in our guest is Justin. As you may notice, is not here. He is on a Disney World vacation.
That's right. He won the Super Bowl, so he went to Disney World.
That was amazing. That dude is so fast. I didn't even see him on the field.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. But he'll be back next week. I am very excited about the guests that we have here on the show. So why don't we bring in our first one?
Yeah.
She is one of the members and one of the main members of the creative team of Mythfall, a new book that is coming very soon to Kickstarter. Let's bring her in right here. Cece Affini, hello.
Hey,
hi. Thanks so much for coming. Thanks for talking about this book. I'm very excited.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, cool. So just to clarify for anybody listening or watching right now, this Kickstarter isn't live yet. It's going to be live soon. End of month, we think, is the goal, right?
Yeah, we're so close.
Okay. Well, what's that like before we get into the concept of the book? Like these five, we talk to a lot of people who have their Kickstarters up or they're finishing up their campaign. But right now, in this period, in the week or two before it's getting ready, what is that feeling like?
Oh boy. So I will say we have our pre-launch page up, so you can go there and get notified when we do, like the moment that we launch. But the weeks leading up to it is just like everything's coming together all at once. We're hoping that we hit our launch date and without a hitch. It's a lot of moving pieces, but a lot of really exciting stuff too. Like we did a test print and we got our test print in, so like I could feel the physical book in my hands, and we did a test. We want to do a travel poster, and we wanted to do it like a metal print, so we got test prints of the metal print. It's like, wow. But it's also like, 30 hours of graphic design work in a weekend. Wow. So it's like, and then, yeah, so it's a lot, but it's all really exciting. It's exciting a lot. It's a good a lot, I think. Yeah.
Well, so reading your book, and I would love to hear your pitch from you, but I read through the book. I thought it was very fun. I really was into it, really enjoyed the characters, loved the mix of fantasy and sci-fi going on there. But I was not surprised at the end when I read your bio, and it was like, you said you were into D&D, because I was like, oh, that fits. That definitely tracks here. What inspiration did you take from that into this book? And just, again, why don't you pitch us the book so people know what it is?
Sure. So like the real brief overview is that it's a fantasy epic in space. And this issue one follows a character, Malkin Trasmus, who's a bureaucrat on an alien planet. And he's trying to stop a war from breaking out on that planet. But he has some challenges, like his agency's like in danger of getting shut down. And he's having like issue one is like he's having like a really bad day. And but where the story's going, because in issue one it contains what I've been casually calling like the prologue. So the first five pages take place 5,000 years in the past. It's a full fantasy setting, and it's this devastating cataclysm that took place thousands of years ago in their history, and the ramifications of that are still at play, even though we're in this futuristic space age society.
Yeah. So not very ambitious, just like a very small slice of life.
Just a small scale about people, yeah.
Day in the life, just
yeah. Well, so yeah. When that was one of my big impressions here, and I'm always very curious about this. When you're doing something like this, when you're building this massive world that, like you said, starts 5,000 years earlier, jumps 5,000 years ahead, you have multiple different bits of technology and factions and all of these things going on. Where does that start for you in the planning stage? How do you build that out?
So I did actually start with the characters. And I also started with, I guess, a concept, which is more of a desire for escapism, I think, than anything else. This is one of those projects that you've kind of like, it's not like a thing that I wrote one time. It's like the thing that I write. So I've been working on it for a long time, and it's evolved a lot over the time that I've been working on it. So initially the idea was this sort of like a multiverse world hopping type of thing. And I had a couple of characters that I sprinkled into that. And then as I started to get interested in the characters, I transitioned away from that to a more static sci-fi setting. So instead of multiverse hopping, it's interplanetary stuff. And yeah, so it initially started out as sort of like one of the worlds you could multiverse hop to, and it still has a sort of like a mirror version of Earth type quality to it from that original starting point.
What was that moment like when you realized, oh, I have this whole multiverse planned out, oh wait, I just need to do this one universe?
It was so like that transition happened like when I was in high school. So it was
a lot of transitioning going on.
Yeah. But it was more about like you're very, I think, sort of unselfconscious at that age about just doing whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And you're less worried about, I think, what is what's expected of you, and just more about like, you know, it would be really cool. And then you just kind of like start from there. And so I was like, I'm not so interested into this multiverse thing anymore. I just want more of this one thing that I really like. And I kind of transitioned. That's kind of what started the transition. Yeah.
One of the things I really like about the way this kind of starts is the time we spend with the characters. It's great because we're getting inside their head, really kind of understanding their perspective on their life. And we spend like good chunks with the characters. It's nice. It's nice to kind of get different points of views from a comic. Usually it's like one person's point of view and then a lot of action surrounding that person. And I really appreciated the fact that we were getting in the characters' heads, like really kind of getting their point of view. It was nice. Even though there's all this other stuff going on, it was still those kind of really cool moments. I was very impressed with your writing.
That was actually the suggestion of my editor, Barbara Perez Marquez. So I had initially envisioned this as sort of like a prose novel. And then when I had the opportunity to try it out as a comic book, I really enjoyed the process of script writing and the process of making things visual. But I wasn't very experienced. And it's a funny thing is that there's, in writing classes, they tell you, you know, these aren't rules, these are guidelines. But then in comics writing, there's often not even guidelines. It's just like, it's very open and it's hard to understand what you should do. And so, one of the things that my editor, pointed out in my script is like, you should add narration here. And I really liked that because one of the things you kind of lose in the transition is, having that inner, voice of the character is like one of the biggest features. It's the most prominent in prose, that inner voice, and finding a way to kind of retain that so you still feel connected strongly to those characters in the comic medium was really great feedback, and it's something that I was happy to take to heart.
Cool. Can you talk about putting together the team on this? Was that your editor who put it together? Did you be like, okay, pull up in the A-team van and put everybody in it, or how did that work?
No, that was me. So the publisher on this is ADM Comics, which is us. It's me and my three friends. It's me and my husband and my two friends. And I already told him I was going to be spending Valentine's Day with like a bunch of other dudes on the internet, so I should probably also not bump him down to friend status. So it's my husband and my two friends, and it started with my friend's property incident report that they wanted to produce as a comic, and when they were putting together the publishing company to make that under, my husband said, you know, I think this could be a really good opportunity for Mythfall and that you should try it out. And so that's how it started as a comic. And then from there, I started looking for an artist or a team of artists, really, and other creators to work with. So the first person, I think... Yeah, Allie was first. Allie Presswick is my illustrator. She's, like, unreally fantastic. Like, every day, like, I work with her, I'm like, how did I get so lucky? I send her, like, you know, like, some notes, and then she just sends me something back, and I'm like, wow. So that's been, like, a really fantastic experience. And Allie helped me pick out the other sort of visual contributors to the comics. She helped me pick a colorist, actually, is the most straightforward thing to say. And so Allie had been a fan of Aaron's work for a while, and Aaron had a style that she really liked, and so Allie recommended Aaron to me, and then we reached out to her just, like, on a lark. We were like, well, she likes Aaron, so we want to find somebody like Aaron, but let's just message Aaron and see what happens. And then she was in, and that was really exciting.
Nice.
Yeah, and then Haley Rose Lyons, our letterer, and we worked with them on incident reports, so that's why we had access to Haley and then I reached out to Barb because I knew that I was gonna need an editor. Yeah, because yeah. I was like, I don't know enough about what I'm doing to think I can do this.
I mean, that's super awesome. Mm-hmm. That not only do you get to do this idea that's been sitting in your head for so long now, but you're doing it with people that you really like and you really like working with. What a wonderful experience. That's so cool. In terms of the Kickstarter, I know you touched on this a little bit, but when it does launch, presumably people are going to get the issue. What else can they potentially expect to get out of it?
So we have the issue itself, and then we have a couple of different variant covers. The standard cover is illustrated and colored by Allie, and then Aaron has their own cover that they basically illustrated and colored. So there's an Allie cover, and there's an Aaron cover, and then we have two additional variant covers, one from Desiree Guiden, who is a graphic designer, and she has a really cool kind of, like, it's hard to describe her art style because I'm a writer, so but it's very, I feel like if I say impression, I don't really know enough about impressionism to say, like, impressionistic, but it's sort of, it's lineless, and it's got, like, it's very, like, bright colors, and
it's fine.
I think so. I think so. Yeah.
It's mostly an audio podcast, so people will have to go with you.
Yeah. And then Kaylin rounds out our variant covers, and Kaylin Smith. She was the artist on Loot and a couple of other titles that are escaping me now. But I found her on Loot, which was kickstarted as well, and cool. Quite a few indie titles, and I think she writes and draws her own comics as well. So, and then the other thing that we have is the graphic designer that I worked with is Lori Tan, and I asked her to make basically a travel poster for each of the planets.
Oh,
and
fun.
So this is...
Oh my god, that's great.
Rule
of the Republic.
Yes. For anybody listening, it's like a very retro, neo-futurist kind of travel poster.
I think WPA style poster, like for national parks, or NASA released a few years back WPA style posters for like the different planets in the solar system. So we did that, but for the planets in Mythfall. Yeah, so those will be postcards. You can get them as like literal postcards or as a metal print. So.
Oh, I love that. Nice. Cece, this is so cool. This project is great.
Congratulations.
And like we're talking about, there's so much ambition here, and it's all on the page. Very excited and fingers crossed for you when it eventually launches.
Yeah.
We'll let you go so you can actually have a Valentine's Day with your husband. But thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
All right. Have care. A good night.
Congrats. Good night.
All right, there we go. Once again, the project is called Mythfall, as we mentioned. It should be launching later this month on Kickstarter. Very great, very fun comic book.
It's epic in all the right ways. And you can the passion jumps throughout through the page. So hopefully it blows up as it should.
Yeah. Not to call you out here before we bring in the next guest, but I do want to mention, Pete, usually Justin shows up like at the last second right before we tape, right? Mm-hmm. And he's always talking about getting inside of the characters' heads. So far in the show, you got here a minute before recording, and then you were talking in our first interview about how interesting it was to get in the characters' heads. Are you Justin?
Wouldn't that be a fun Valentine's Day surprise?
Oh yeah.
Sure. No, I'm just doing an adjusted impression. You know what I mean? It's just it's a light touch.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Talk about your dog. Talk about Pip, I guess.
You know, don't slip. I wish, man, Justin doesn't put Pip on the podcast enough. It's upsetting, really.
Michael Tillman has a good suggestion. Could you say some line producer things?
Oh yeah, tuck in that jib. Write me some better dialogue.
Yep.
Man, the Mountain Dew.
Oh, man, you could wander on the next Spielberg set right now. Tell you what, why don't we bring in our next guest here? He is the creator of the upcoming comic book Prometheus in Chains, as well as a bunch of riffs on Dracula that I'm excited to talk about. Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Davis, hello.
Hey, welcome.
Hi. Oh, we got to unmute the user. There we go. Here, we got it. We got it. Yeah.
My bad. Sorry.
Hey, welcome. Great to have you.
No problem. It seemed like you came in with a hot quip.
It was the most brilliant joke that I've ever told in my life, nobody heard it.
Oh, man.
So then,
yep.
Before we get in and talk about the book, Pete, if this is actually Pete and not Justin, is always on our back wall beat, and I'm sure he's going to want to get to the Thor cover that's behind you. Pete, do you have any questions about this?
Yeah. It's a glorious cover. Talk a little bit about why you love it so much.
You know, I've always liked Thor. You know, both the Viking myth of Thor and the Marvel adaptation of the character. He's just fascinating. I've always enjoyed the comic and Jason Aaron's run. The God Butcher, it really put me in a mindset that I liked Thor a lot more. And so that's why I chose this one to be the centerpiece of my wall. Like this room here is where I put all my nerdy stuff. So I've got, you know, all the walls are full with these giant 36 by 48 canvas covers. So Thor goes right in the middle.
That's glorious. Now I wish I could see them all, but man, what a cool art display that you have. And
yeah, I dig it, man. I put the things up on my wall that I like to look at, and you know, but I keep it contained to my to this area of my house. I don't let it like spread everywhere. But these walls are full.
Nice.
Well, why don't we talk about Prometheus in Chains a little bit? Not to pivot off of your back walls or anything like that, but this book is coming out right at the beginning of June from Red 5, so still a while away, but part of the reason for having you on is there's the whole final order cutoff thing, things are solicited. We'll talk about all of that in a second, but I do want to talk about specifically the book first, because obviously we don't know a ton about it. We do know, though, that you've written two books about Dracula, and I believe a third on the way, if I remember correctly. Rise of Dracula.
Actually, there's four now.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
So why... I love hosting a comic book show. Why pivot from Dracula to Frankenstein?
You know, it makes sense.
I'm an adult.
Yeah, it makes sense, you know, to pull those Victorian characters together. And I introduced... Victor in Rise of Dracula issue 3, and he was initially just going to be a fun little Easter egg character. You know, you see him, he plays a role, and that's it. You know, we never see him again. But as I was writing it, I discovered I really enjoyed his voice in my head. You know, my characters talk to me all the time, and I really liked talking to Victor. So I started thinking, you know, how can I bring these two characters, these two worlds together, essentially? And so we, you know, ended up creating a shared horror universe. You know, we have Dracula from Cult of Dracula and Rise of Dracula. Now we have Victor Frankenstein and Elizabeth Frankenstein. She's a very important character. And I've got another book on the way called Dorian, and it's an adaptation of The Picture of Dorian Gray. I have a little bit of an obsession with the Victorian horror era. In my opinion, that's the greatest era of horror ever, followed very closely by the 70s and 80s slasher cowboys. You know, those are the best times for horror ever. You know, so it made a lot of sense to me to bring Frankenstein and Dracula together. You know, they just work. And then, of course, you know, I watched Penny Dreadful and loved how they did it. And I was
like, oh my God, that show is so good and so underrated. I love it. I mean, go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say, you said something that was very fascinating to me, and I'd love to back up the truck and talk about it a little bit. Did you say your characters talk to you?
You talk to
Dracula, like when you're shopping, Dracula's like, hey, easy on the soup. Or is it
easy on the soup?
Or is it more, I don't know.
Easy on the soup.
Well, he talks to him. I want to know what they talk about. Or is it kind of like Dracula's hey.
It just became about you. Who's telling you to be easy on the soup, Pete? Are you going into supermarkets and some guy's like, that's too much soup. Easy on the soup.
Yeah, I know. No, like when I start out, you know, there's basically two different types of writers. And you'll hear different terms, but they mean basically the same thing. There are architects and there's gardeners. And I'm a gardener. So I begin with an idea. Like for Prometheus and Chains, it was Mary Shelley's Frankenstein in the post-World War II atomic age with Victor and Elizabeth. They're both two of the Jewish scientists that fled Germany as Hitler was rising. They came to the U.S. and they worked on the Manhattan Project and helped create the bomb, which, you know, helped bring down the Reich. So that's where I begin, you know, just with that little itty bitty paragraph. And then as I go, the characters tell me where they want to go. You know, so as I'm writing, a prime example of that would be in Rise of Dracula, which is my last book. Ellie, she's everybody's favorite character from that series, 'cause she's just batshit insane. I like to describe her as if the Joker and crazy Harley Quinn did bath salts and made a meth addicted schizophrenic baby. That would be Ellie. And she was a character again. She's gonna be a throwaway character, just gonna introduce her, have a few jokes. She was gonna be the grave diggers essentially, and she just kept saying, hey, I've got more, I can do more, I can do more, I can do more. And I was like, okay, let's do this, you know, and just started writing. And you know, I hear her voice in my head, not in a crazy, well, it's probably crazy. I mean, writers, we're all a little bit nuts, you know, but yeah, that's my writing process. I just begin with an idea and then let the characters, walk me along.
Wow. Well, let me ask you this then, at a certain point, the characters need to stop writing and you need to start editing and honing it down. When does that begin for you?
Way too late.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really hard, and that's one of the pitfalls of being a gardener. You know, sometimes you have to get to a point in the story, you have to hit certain beats, and the character's like, maybe let's go over here and check this out. It's like if you're playing The Witcher and you do all the side quests and you then remember, holy shit, there's a main story I'm supposed to be following here. So yeah, that's difficult, but I put it off till the very last minute, and then I go back and cut things. And I've had a lot of scenes that I've cut and then brought them back at later times in the book. You know, but yeah, it happens a little bit toward the end when I'm writing. You know, that's when I'm like, all right, guys, I gotta finish this. We'll do another book. That's how we ended up now with four Dracula books coming. So, like, there's just more story to tell.
Well, I mean, I think you're touching on this as well, but so much has been said about these characters, about the Dracula characters, about Frankenstein characters, etc. You called out Penny Dreadful, which did a fantastic job of mashing them all together in new ways, and that's just the tip of the mountain there. So when you are tackling these, how do you find something fresh to say? How do you find something new?
That is probably the most difficult part of doing this, because when you're writing characters like Victor Frankenstein or Dracula or Dorian Gray, you have this immediate name recognition and fan bases, you know, so you immediately have a following. But then you realize, oh shit, I have a following for these characters. So you feel obligated to, you know, be true to what the readers expect, but then you also have to find a way to give it to them in a different way. And so when I started writing Dracula, Cult of Dracula, the one thing I said to myself is I do not want to tell another story set in Victorian London about a creepy white guy in a tuxedo with a widow's peak coming in and buying up all the land. There is nothing I can do to that story. It has been told a million times. It's been told very well. There's nothing I could add to it. So, you know, I decided to modernize it and make a lot of changes. Keeping all of Stoker's themes and his intentions. Like, I went back, I read letters that he wrote, journals, what other people said about him, you know, because I wanted to know not only what he was saying, but why he was saying it. And research for my books is very, very important to me. So I kept all of Stoker's themes, and in Prometheus and Chains, I keep all of Shelley's themes, but I take the characters and I mix them up. So like with Victor and Elizabeth, now instead of being in Victorian London, they're in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and they're building an atomic bomb. That's not so far away from Victor creating a monster. You know, the bomb becomes a metaphor for the creature. And then later in the book, we actually do get a creature, you know, because you have to give the fans that.
You have to, yeah.
But yeah, it's the legacy that comes along with the characters. It's a blessing and a burden all at the same time.
This is obviously very specific to my interest, and not to put you on the spot about this part because I haven't read the book yet, but why Jewish characters? I'm Jewish. I was certainly, my interest was piqued by that particular detail.
You know, it's a story that a lot of people aren't aware of, how many Jews fled Nazi Germany and worked with the Allies in very important roles. And there were many Jewish scientists that worked on that Manhattan Project. So, you know, I wanted to represent that culture, you know, and tell that story so that maybe people start looking at the history and saying, wow, there were some really awesome Jewish heroes who helped save the day and helped, you know, bring down these concentration camps. So, you know, I didn't want to present the Jewish characters as victims in this. I wanted them to be agency. And, you know, there's also, I thought there was a really interesting theme with Victor struggling with his heritage, his background, and the situation that he's in now. You know, I will say I am not Jewish. I have done a lot of research into the Jewish culture, and spoken with many of my Jewish friends in depth about this, because I do want to make sure that the culture is represented well. Just like in Cult of Dracula, I wanted to make sure I was representing pagan culture and Wicca and the Celtic culture very accurately. I didn't want to make it a caricature, and I didn't want to, you know, just present it the same flat, uninteresting way, and that could be disrespectful to those people. So, you know, it's very important, and, you know, I think I like telling stories from different perspectives, and I like putting myself in those perspectives as I'm writing, as I go through it. So yeah, I thought it was a really interesting story to tell that needed to be told, to kind of, you know, to recognize these the efforts of these people who really, really helped win World War II.
Well, I'll definitely fact check you when you come out. I'm sure you'll appreciate that. I mean, in terms of the book, though, these ideas are all big and very responsible and great, but I assume there's also some horror, right? So oh, God, you were yes. talking about the type of horrors you like earlier. Mm-hmm. How does that feed into this upcoming book?
You know, very influenced by the Grindhouse era of those feel like the you know the Peter Cushing, that type of Dracula, Christopher Lee. That's what I grew up watching. Like I would sneak, and my parents knew I thought I was all sneaky, but I would wake up and there was this program out of Nashville, Tennessee. It was kind of like the Elvira thing, you know, but it was a knockoff, and they would show those old, you know, Hammer films and sometimes Troma films. And so that was really my first impression on horror. And so that's definitely had a huge influence on the way that that I present the stories. You know, I believe Stephen King said, you know, if you want to write effective horror, write about what scares you. And so that's what I've done with the books as best I can.
What about modern horror? This is obviously off the book. I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. Are there any modern horror movies or horror shows or anything like that you're digging other than Penny Dreadful?
Absolutely. You know, I really enjoy American Horror Story. I enjoy anything by Ty West. So X mm-hmm. and Pearl, fantastic films. I had the opportunity to meet Ty West when he was, he just did House of the Devil. He was actually on the independent, film circuit, you know, the festivals. And so I got to meet Ty West and he's just, so I love anything he does. Pretty much anything horror and anything not mainstream horror. Like I just watched a movie called Blood Red Sky. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a vampire movie that takes place entirely on a plane. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. you know, Train to Busan was another one. I love Train to Busan because there's a scene in World War Z, probably the only scene I liked in that movie, but they're on the airplane mm-hmm. and there's a zombie.
Oh yeah.
They're fucked. Okay. There's no way you're getting out of this. And I felt watching that, I felt claustrophobia. I felt genuine terror. And then when you go to Train to Busan, that's that scene for 2 hours and it's insanely cool. And I don't think I've ever watched a film that made me more tense going through it. Mm. And I hope that I can write something that brilliant one day. And Attack on Titan. I consider that mm-hmm. horror, and I am super into that right now. So I just discovered Crunchyroll, nice. I'm kind of addicted. I may or may not have gone through 3 seasons of Attack on Titan in a weekend, but nice. You know, 75 episodes, I think that is. So, yeah.
Well,
that's my horror.
I mean, I know you're saying that you love Victorian horror and you feel like mm-hmm. that's a perfect era, but you've also called out several zombie things in a row. Mm-hmm. Is that a world that you would want to play in for a future comic book, potentially?
So I kind of hate zombies, but yeah, I'm working on a zombie book. So. there you go. And one thing that I like to do is I ripped this off from Pixar, but I like to foreshadow my next book in the current book that I'm writing. So you met Victor Frankenstein in Rise of Dracula number 3. You're going to see some aspects of Dorian Gray in Dorian. You're also going to see zombies in the Frankenstein book, Prometheus and Chains, because that's essentially what Victor's doing. He just doesn't realize it. You know, he's creating, he's developing a way to create zombies essentially, and that may or may not be manipulated and exploited by the for lack of a better term, the deep state. Mm. You know, so yeah, it's I like some zombie movies, but some of them they get a little repetitive. Mm-hmm. And it's the same story told a million different times. I mean, you're just essentially trying to get to Day of the Dead or Dawn of the Dead, excuse me. And you know, once you've seen Dawn of the Dead, you've seen every zombie movie you ever need to watch.
There you go. Let's talk a little business here. So the book isn't coming out for a couple of months, like we talked about. Mm-hmm. I'm sure most of our listeners generally have a sense of how the comic book industry works. But if you are interested in the book, what do people need to do at this point?
The best thing you can do, the most important thing you can do, and I urge everybody out there to do this, go to your local comic book shop, ask them to order Prometheus and Chains. It's that simple. Please support your local comic book shops first. They are the backbone of this industry. If they didn't exist, everything would be run by two massive corporations, and every book would feature Bat Dude and Spider Guy, and that would be it. That's all you would get because that sells. And so your local comic book shop, they have their finger on the pulse of the industry. They know when these cool new independent books, these things you haven't heard of from emerging creators. So order it, ask your local comic book shop to order it first. And if you absolutely have to, then you can search for it on Amazon. But the reason we're out really promoting this book so early, we have very high hopes for it. You know, our initial research is showing that it's going to do well. And coming off of Cult of Dracula being a top 100 best-selling comic of 2021, Rise of Dracula did very, very well. We've got the Cult of Dracula film in development with BR Films right now. So we're riding this wave into Prometheus, and you know, we want people to go to their local comic book shop early and ask them, put it on their radar. You know, Red 5 Comics is a small company. You know, I'm a relatively new writer. I'm very fortunate that I've had a lot of success. But you know, I'm not well known like Todd McFarlane or something like that. So promoting it early is important. And then also the way the industry works. So the book comes out in June, it'll be solicited in Diamond's previews in April. So 2 months before it ships. So we need, you know, by the time we get to April, it's too late to make people aware of it because the process has already started. Stores have already decided what they're going to order, and you either got it or you didn't. But if we start talking about it in January, which again is what we did with Cult of Dracula, we were out beating the streets. I am a dogged promoter of my books. I would have been very happy working for P.T. Barnum. So yeah, it's important from a business angle to promote your work early because that gives time for audiences to get into it and then to bring it to the local comic book shops, and the local comic book shops order it, and then you get to sell more books. So yeah, it's very important to be out there early in the process if you want to be successful.
Yeah. Well, cool. Richard, it sounds like, fingers crossed, I think it's going to do very well. It sounds like a very really interesting book. I'm very excited to check it out. Thank you so much for coming on. Lovely chatting
really
with you.
Appreciate
thanks for coming
it.
On Valentine's
Take care
Day.
Of yourself.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Great
time. All right. There we go. Once again, the book is called Prometheus in Chains. It's going to be out this June from Red 5. And as the man said, definitely go to your local comic book shop. Let them know you want to get it so that they can order the proper amount. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. And folks, it is time for our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in Q&A over on Crowncast or in the comments or on YouTube and Facebook, and we'll get to them. But in the meantime, we've got to talk about drinks, Pete. We've got to talk about what we're drinking. Why don't you go first real quick? Because I
got
to bring
Yeah,
because
you got a, you know, a fancy
thing.
I got a whole thing going on. I'm still polishing off some beers here. I got the last one of the Oktoberfest. So, yeah.
Ooh, that's going to go bad really soon. Beer goes bad. So that's Oktoberfest. It came out in October and it's February now. So I don't know.
Still good, man. Still good.
Well, this drink that I'm drinking tonight is very good. I know it has a TWD on it, but that's not what it's about at all.
Yeah, it seems like you're just a walking advertisement for The Walking Dead.
All the time, baby. Anyway, this is another drink that's been created by our amazing CBC chef, Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray
Bullet. You talking about the birthday boy, Stray Bullies?
It was his birthday yesterday. Happy birthday to him. And on his birthday, he designed and made a drink for us, and all of us, which is kind of incredible. This is also a drink that I want to, full disclosure, I strong-armed him into making. I was like, hey, why don't you this week...
Wait, you forced him on his birthday to do something?
Not on his birthday. I asked him earlier. And then on his birthday, I was like, where's the fucking drink, Brett?
No, wow.
I wasn't like that. He just did it. But it's. I was like, hey, why don't we make a drink about Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania? Because that's coming out this week. And he was like, don't mind if I do. And of course, came up with something absolutely delicious. I'm going to bring up the recipe here. But the drink is called the Quantumaniac. There you go. And just to read it off for anybody listening in the podcast, it is crushed smoked salt around the rim, which looks like little ants crawling around your glass there. The most appetizing thing one can imagine. It's got sugar cubes, something that attracts ants. And then it's got a juice of a lime, orange bitters, spicy bitters, tequila, Campari, ginger liqueur, a little club soda, and an orange peel expressed over it. It is so good, so delicious. Just based on early reviews, way better than the movie itself. So there you go.
Oh, come on, man. You haven't even seen it yet.
Oh, my God. Oh,
dude, Marvel. Bro, shots fired. Take it easy with that.
Marvel, is Marvel okay? Are they going to be okay because some guy on a podcast said they didn't get good reviews? Oh, no.
Oh, my God. You haven't even seen the movie yet. You're already trashing, you piece of shit.
Oh, where, Marvel, where?
Oh, my God. You're an asshole, man.
Sure am, but this drink is
sounds pleasing delicious
from a mouth hole instead of I don't know.
Yeah, what's it like eating all those ants?
I don't know, man. Ease off the soup. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, nice, dude. Well, it sounds absolutely delicious, and I'm glad you have all the weird ingredients to go into that thing. And congratulations on being fancy.
Well, I'll tell you what. This is apropos of absolutely nothing, but I was going to send you ingredients for a drink once, and Drizzly, the drink ordering place that we all use that currently sponsors the podcast, they don't deliver to your address. Where are you living?
Yeah, dude.
Are you in the woods? What's going on?
I'm outside of Baltimore, but I guess too far outside.
I guess so, man. All right, why don't we get some questions here? We've been delaying long enough. We got a couple of them over here on Crowdcast. I want to start off with this one from Michael Tillman. Pete, did your heart get lassoed today?
Dude, I've been bawling my eyes out watching that goddamn teaser trailer over and over again.
I mean, I should have known that was going to happen, but
I mean, how many times have you seen it? How many times have you cried today?
One. I watched it once. The news here is that Ted Lasso is coming back on March 15th, which is
March
Wednesday.
March 15th?
Yes.
Look how close that is, man.
Oh, my God. 12 episodes, one a week, Apple TV Plus's first Wednesday show. They released a short one-minute teaser showing off all the characters, making believe signs. And
it was absolutely fucking beautiful. It was magical. It was everything that I needed. It was like a warm, cozy hoodie on a cold Valentine's Day. It was nice, man. It was perfectly well timed, and I bawled my fucking eyes out. And I'm starting to rewatch everything to get ready because I got a month.
Oh my gosh, you really have to remember what went on. It's very difficult to remember. I do have a question for you off of this, which isn't related necessarily to this question from Michael Tillman, but...
Shouts to Michael Tillman.
Shots fired. This is coming out... shots fired on
no,
Michael
Tillman. No, it was a shout-out.
Oh, shout-out, not shots fired. I don't honestly know the difference.
Don't try to start beef between me and the Tillman.
Start beef. Let's cook up the beef. That's a good thing.
Oh,
yum,
my
yum.
God.
It's
get
delicious
to the thing.
Okay. So this is coming out on Wednesday. First Wednesday show for Apple TV+, Wednesday, March 15th. Wednesday, March 1st is when The Mandalorian starts coming out on Disney Plus.
Oh my God.
So Wednesday mornings, let's forget about the premiere, because I understand like March 15th, you're probably going to want to watch the premiere of Ted Lasso. That makes sense. But the next week, you're going to have a new episode of Ted Lasso and you're going to have a new episode of The Mandalorian. Which one are you watching first, Pete?
Yeah, it's Lasso all the way. But man, that's a tough.
Really?
It's a fun morning, that's for sure. I mean, you know, you're going to be Wednesday rich. That's going to be glorious.
I love that classic phrase, Wednesday rich, Thursday poor.
Yeah, that's how it's going to work. It'll be not much work will be getting done on Wednesdays in March. I'll tell my boss ahead of time.
This is nothing against Ted Lasso, but I think I will watch Mandalorian first, probably, of the two of them.
I don't care.
I feel like I need to explain the basic concept of podcasts to you, but all right, why don't we move on? We got a bunch of different stuff going on. We got a lot of discussion actually on YouTube about Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. All the game says, not a lot of thrill for the Ant-Man crew this Valentine's Day with the new movie getting a little bit of kicking from critics. But following up on that, Frederica Rosa says, how are your expectations for Quantumania this week? Some mixed reactions online. I don't know how much you've been paying attention to that, Pete, but any thoughts?
Well, here's the thing. I don't, you know, critics of me don't usually agree on things, but I think Ant-Man and the Wasp, the last one, was really great, and I felt like it found a really good groove for itself, and I'm a little disappointed because I thought that we would be carrying that momentum into the next one, but it just seems like we're tackling a lot in this next one. But Kang the Conqueror is a very interesting character. So it'll be interesting to spend some more time with this villain in the MCU. And I'm a little worried we're going to be getting away from the formula, the thing that brought all the popularity to the Ant-Man. But I'm also hoping that Marvel knows what it's doing and won't ruin a good thing. So we'll see. I'm definitely going to go see it. I don't care what some fucking critic says.
Wow. Take it to the critics, Pete. Take it to the critics.
I'm looking right at you when I say
looking right at me. I'm seeing it Saturday, same as everybody else. I haven't seen it earlier or anything, but I'm definitely going to be a jerk to you when we tape a podcast about it. I agree with you that it's really impossible to talk about something that we haven't seen, but it's certainly a lot of the discussion online today has been about, and it's a perennial discussion with Marvel about Ted Lasso, but as a secondary discussion about, I guess, like the episodic quality of Marvel movies. And some people arguing, like we've discussed a lot in our Patreon Slack, of like, well, no, this is really Marvel chapter 31 or 35 or whatever you want to count it. So just watch it like that. Like it's the 35th episode and just roll with it and stop complaining about it. And my personal feeling is I like it best and I like the MCU movies best when, yes, there are those like deep cut things you can pick up on if you're a hardcore fan and you know this stuff offhand. It doesn't even need to be Easter eggs. I'm talking about like callbacks and riffs and whatever, things that build on other things. But when you do need to actually do the homework, when you do actually need to be like, I need to have watched 15 movies in order to understand this one movie, that doesn't work for me. And that feels antithetical to what built the MCU and what made, at the very least, the first two phases work really well, was they really tried hard for the most part to make it so that anybody could come off the street and see a Marvel movie and be like, well, I didn't get why that guy was there, but I still had a good time anyway. And what I'm getting from the reviews from Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania is it's not that. You have to have seen 30 movies. You have to have watched Loki. You need to understand all these Disney plushes. Otherwise, you're just not going to get it. And beyond that, it's setting up all these other movies. And to me, that's not a movie. That's not even an episode of a TV show, because ideally an episode of a TV show should still have an arc to it. But again, we'll see. You and I have not seen it, so it's hard to comment on it.
That's tough.
There we go. Let's get to another question here. This is from Kevin. Who are some of your favorite over-the-top guano insane characters in comics who aren't Joker or Harley?
Guano insane.
That's a medical term.
I believe. I thought it was an Ace Ventura When Nature Calls reference. Mm. It's probably lying in a big pile of... What? All right. Oh,
nice. I get it. Yeah. Insane characters in comics. I think, what is his name? Madcap? Is that it? The guy with the hammer in Marvel? He was in the Avengers Initiative for a while as well.
Okay.
He's like a messed up version of Deadpool who's a cartoon.
I mean, here's the thing. When you say like insane, I mean, there's different types. There's like Moon Knight has been many different phases of crazy, right?
Phases, yeah.
Yeah, there has been, you know, certain characters have been kind of pushed to the brink in different ways. But yeah, like a Joker or a Harley, there's a different kind of. Out of your gourd.
Kevin, sorry, real quick. Kevin says you mean slapstick. I do mean slapstick. Go ahead.
Okay, great. yeah, I mean, slapstick's a different kind of thing. But
that's the name of the character that I was trying to remember.
Oh, okay. I was like, all right, well, now we're talking about like slapstick comedy and stuff. Yeah. But that's also a little bit crazy when you're slapping people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Those Three Stooges, something's wrong with them. My God. Something is wrong.
Some of the best, you know, comedy.
All I'm saying is somebody should put those guys away and like put them through some serious therapy because they keep hitting each other.
Yeah.
They are not good brothers.
Or they're great brothers. I mean, it's hard to tell with brothers. It's one of those things.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm going to say Moon Knight. What are you saying?
Cool. I already said slapstick, but I will also say this is not a character, but the first one that came to mind is Jinx from Arcane, the League of Legends show on Netflix, who is basically like, and I mean this positively, Harley Quinn, but not funny. Like, she's just... Mm-hmm. I'm going to kill all of you guys. Isn't that great? And then goes and kills everybody and mm-hmm. is nuts. There's a really great, I'm forgetting the name of the voice actress. I think it's Slapstick who does her. But she's very
good. Stop talking about Slapstick, I guess, is my
never,
point.
Never.
Also, Deadpool is an obvious answer.
And Gwenpool as well was called out in the comments.
By Ben the Border Collie.
There you go. We got another one over here on YouTube. Let's see. Ooh, Nelson Martinez says, what are some of your favorite Super Bowl commercials / trailers? Pete, did you watch the Super Bowl?
Yeah, man. I definitely did. Unfortunately, I watched it with an Eagles family, and it was effing heartbreaking. There's nothing like a party that's going and then like gets super sad at the end. Do you know what I mean? Man. Like, oh man, that's a good
every
time.
Every party I've ever been at, man.
Oh man. What was the question?
Great. Super Bowl commercials and trailers.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great Super Bowl commercials. You know, the Mean Joe Green one was one of the first and the most legendary.
Is that this year?
The Mean Joe Green? No, that was back in like the 80s.
Okay, they're talking about this year. From this year. From this Super year. Bowl, favorite commercials or trailers?
The trailers were good. I just sat there with my mouth open. Just being like, what? On the Flash trailer. I mean, that melted my mind. I couldn't believe that they were advertising it because I was like, I didn't think this thing was getting made because of, you know, Flash being an unbelievable dickhead. But I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And then, you know, the reveal at the end. I don't know if we should spoil it. I mean, the internet.
No, it's a trailer that's out there. That's fine. We can talk about it.
I couldn't believe it was happening. It was, but then I went from being like, oh my God, excited to like, oh no, why is he a part of something that's the Flash and that blows.
Mm-hmm. It is all very confusing feelings there. I agree. From a comic book superhero movie fan perspective, it does look like a ridiculous amount of fun, and it does look like it's taking a lot of elements that I hate and making them work somehow, which is real weird.
Emotionally weird place to be with it.
Really don't like the Snyderverse. I really don't like Ezra Miller. I really don't like Flashpoint as a story.
Yeah,
this looks fun. What's happening here?
Yeah, we're lining up things that I hate, and all of a sudden it looks interesting. What?
Yeah, I also don't really love legacy sequels. Like, in essence, the idea of like just let Batman and Batman Returns B. That's fine. We don't need to bring Michael Keaton back. He's done some awesome stuff in between.
How
but
dare
same
you.
Sort of thing. I don't know. Looks fun.
Yeah.
Looks fun. There you go.
I mean, the fact that he did is like, I'm Batman. I just.
Yeah. Oh, Ben the Motor Collie, I do want to call something out here. Says the specific Zod is stupid, but yay, Zod. No, Michael Shannon rules as Zod. I'm sorry. Yeah. I've mentioned this a million times, but the third trailer for Man of Steel, which is the one of the best things I've ever seen in my life, and I've watched it a million times. I watched the movie, by the way, once, and I don't think I'll ever watch it again, but the trailer is so good. That's the one where he goes, I will find him, which is also in the movie, but God, I love that so much. I love every acting choice Michael Shannon makes across the board. I could not be happier to see him play Zod just because it means more in Michael Shannon insanity. That's great.
Okay.
I'm into it. There you go.
So
other trailers
insane
and commercials,
people,
though.
You should have just said Michael Shannon.
That's true. Do you remember the rumor where he talked about where he's coming back for Batman v Superman, and he gave a bunch of interviews where he was like, yeah, in the movie when they bring me back, I have flippers. And everybody's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, I have flippers. They gave me, I don't know why, they gave me flippers. But like at one point I went off set and I had to use the bathroom and I was trying to open the knob to the bathroom door. And I had a really hard time because I had to leave the flippers on between shots. Everybody's like, that's weird. I don't get why that's happening. And then later on, he's like, nah, I was lying.
Out of his mind.
Out of his gourd. I love it. It's great. Other commercials, I hated the Tubi one. Just because it gave me nearly a heart attack. I don't know if you saw that one, Pete.
Yeah, there was a bunch of commercials where everybody was just kind of looking at each other like, what just happened?
Oh, no, but the Tubi one where it switched channels for you?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that I was like, what is happening right now? Did somebody hook into my Apple TV? What is going on? Didn't engender me to Tubi at all, to be honest, so I don't know if that worked. The J-Lo, Ben Affleck, Duncan one?
Oh, yeah, that was hysterical.
That was a good time. Good for them. What a night.
Always ask for a glazed.
Absolutely. Love it. Otherwise, not very memorable in terms of the commercials. Oh, we should probably also mention the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 trailer dropped.
Yeah.
Great. Looks good. I'll watch that.
I'm very excited for that. I'm really hoping we get some kind of closure with their relationship because, you know, it was really getting to a magical place. And then, you know. Things happen. So
I will say it was a weird bit of whiplash online seeing James Gunn tweet out the Flash trailer being like, can't wait for you all to see this. One of the greatest superhero movies ever made. And like 5 minutes later, he was like, check out the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. I'm so proud of this movie. And I mean, I know he can do both, but the fact that he was like, check out this DC movie and then check out this Marvel movie.
Ooh, I did a little something. Well, there needs to be a day in between because of
I think so.
Really?
I feel like he's under the gun.
Oh, boy.
Damn, boy. All right, we got a couple more questions here. We should
plugging
get through.
A non-existent podcast.
Hold on. Don't spoil it. Okay, we got one from Stray Bullet. This is a long one here.
Stray Bullies.
I remember an episode of Growing Pains where Mike Seaver's favorite musician turned out to be a total dick. It really turned Mike off of the rock star. Later, Dr. Seaver asked him if he still liked the music regardless of the musician being a total dick. Of course, Mike said yes, and Dr. Seaver taught us all a lesson in separating the art from the artist. Is this what we need to do with Ezra Miller and Kirk Cameron and maybe some other terrible actors and musicians? What do you think, Pete? This is obviously a perennial question.
Yeah, what is happening right now? I mean, this is something that, you know, unfortunately, we struggle with a lot of times, you know, where it's like when it comes to music and stuff like that. So I don't know, man. You know, it's a case-by-case basis, and there's a lot that goes into this stuff. And you'd like to be able to separate it, you know? You'd like to be able to be like, no, that was separate. But sometimes it's a little murkier than not. And I do think there are times where, you know, you can say that and it, you know, but it really, I don't know, man. It's hard. And I don't want to tell somebody what's okay in their world and what's not. But, yeah, I mean, some of those people really hurt others, and it's hard to kind of celebrate the things that they've done. But I mean, it's just one of those things with more information kind of comes harder stuff where it's like, where before nobody knew if Bill Shakespeare was cool or not. You know what I mean? We just know his work. So
we just know he shreds a sweet board, right?
That's right. Yeah. And so it's just one of those things where we didn't know a lot about, you know, but now we do. So, you know, and that's good. You can choose, you know, to kind of have something that is entangled and all that, because there are so many options out there. But unfortunately, there's baggage with some people. So it's hard.
I also think another factor, I think you're absolutely right on all of that stuff, but I think another factor is, this is a weird way to phrase it, but are you spending future money on this thing? And what I mean by that, like, to use the very specific example of J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling, total garbage person. I think we all know that. That's very clear right now. I'm not necessarily going out and taking all my Harry Potter books that I got in other countries and burning them or anything like that. Maybe I will reread those books at some point, though certainly that experience is tainted for me. But I'm definitely not going and buying Hogwarts Legacy, because I'm not going to pay for something that is going to put money in their pockets. Conversely, and if somebody tells me I'm wrong about this, please let me know and I will change this. But in case people don't know, Justin Roiland, one of the co-creators of Rick and Morty, he abused a couple of people, was accused of sexual harassment at work, seems like had DM'd some underage girls. Absolutely awful stuff. I really like Rick and Morty. I really enjoy Rick and Morty. So that was tough to hear. But subsequently, the things that have come out about it have painted a picture that basically he hasn't really been involved in the show other than doing the voices since season 2. And even that, he hasn't taken direction. He hasn't been in the writer room. He hasn't been in the office. Nobody knows who he is. They hasn't met people. It's basically been Dan Harmon, who, mind you, has his own problems, but running the room, and that's it. So it's been a totally separate show for him. Additionally, Adult Swim, Hulu, 20th Century Fox, and other companies that were working with him, Squanch Games, all completely cut financial ties with him. So last night, for no particular reason, I just had like an hour free. I realized I hadn't watched the last two episodes of Rick and Morty. And at the beginning, I like did a mental check of like, do I feel bad about this? And certainly hearing his voice made me feel a little bad. But knowing that he's getting no money off of me watching this thing, and it is a show that otherwise I enjoy, made by a lot of other people that I enjoy, and that they are getting rid of him for the next season, on a personal gut check level, I felt okay with it going forward, you know, enough that I was able to enjoy some of the stuff about the episodes. To get back to your point, will other people feel differently? Absolutely. But like you were saying, it's a case-by-case basis, but it's also a personal basis.
Right.
But I also think it comes down to like, who is this hurting? You know, J.K. Rowling, supporting her financially, yes, that is directly going to support her anti-trans rhetoric, and it is actively hurting people. Watching Rick and Morty, which has been financially, they've cut ties with him, supporting Rick and Morty isn't going to support him, so hopefully it's not hurting anybody. So those are another bit of factors that I think you need to put into it. There you go. Good question. Thank you, Straight Bullet. Here's an easier one from Stanley over on YouTube. Easy. Who are your favorite comic romantic relationships?
It was, Peter Parker and MJ. Let's see. Who else? Midnighter and Apollo for sure.
Ooh, that's a good one. Romantic relationships. Rogue and Gambit is great.
Yeah.
That's a great one. Batgirl and Nightwing.
I'm just laughing at Stray Bullet saying Peter Parker and Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarious.
I do like, I mean, talking about Spider-Man stuff, Miles and Gwen, they haven't really done it too much in the comics, but that's a great ship from the movies, and I feel like they should do that in the comics a little bit more.
Hmm.
That'd be a good one.
Black, I mean, if Justin was here, he would say, Catwoman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Batman. Do you not agree with that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was thinking Black Cat and Spider-Man to combat what I was saying.
They're different characters. They're both cat themed, but yes, they're from different companies, Pete.
Yeah.
Harles and Ivy.
Oh, yeah. Says, that's especially in one. The animated series. Yes. Yeah.
Did you watch the Valentine special, Pete?
Yeah. Yeah. It's great.
Great. Did you lose your mind at Brett Goldstein?
Yeah. She's blowing up, man.
You deserve somebody that feels like you're being fucked by lightning. Great line. Great stuff. All right. Ooh, we have a question, I think, all in the game. This will wrap up here. I've asked this a couple of times, and I keep missing it. So you on board with Feige saying they'll slow down the release of Disney Plus shows. What do you think about that, Pete?
People are complaining that Disney Plus shows are putting out too much content?
Shows were an hour. They're going to slow them down by like 50%, and now they're going to be about an hour and a half long. But everybody's going to be
don't. Stop. No, sorry for the people listening that had to endure that.
I think that's fine. I think there was too much Marvel last year and people got burnt out, particularly casual fans. I got burnt out on it. I was like, this is a lot of Marvel. I like this stuff. Please stop feeding me candy. That would be great.
No, I... Yes, please, candy. There's no need to slow down the candy machine. Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, it's hard to complain about great content. I love the Disney Plus shows and... Yeah,
me too. But I'd rather they take more time and roll out better shows than give us a new Marvel show every single week.
What was bad? What didn't you like? You didn't like Loki? You didn't have fun with Loki?
You mentioned the one show that I liked. I didn't like She-Hulk. I had problems.
That's you.
With
That's
Blue
your
Knight.
Personal stuff.
Yes, you asked me what I didn't like. Yeah, I know. That was my personal stuff. I didn't like She-Hulk. I had problems with Moon Knight. I had problems with Miss Marvel.
So you're wrong on all three fronts there. So.
Okay, Captain America, the Winter Soldier, not great.
How dare you?
Nope, not great.
How dare you?
I liked elements of most
you
of
don't like
shows.
New Orleans, man? Come on.
I do like New Orleans. And I like Bucky, but there you go.
Yeah, this is the problem. It's people are saying like, oh, there's too much stuff. And now it's like, okay, we'll roll out slower. Don't listen to us. Do you. Do whatever you...
No, man. Less stuff. Go outside. Enjoy nature. Smell a flower or something.
There's no time.
Eat a
you should
sandwich
be binging something instead of being... No.
Here's what I say. Here's what I say to Marvel. Ease off the soup. All right? We're going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. You sure this is a good idea?
No, I do not.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card online to Midtown Comics or, of course, Long John Silver for some reason. And we just need a brave volunteer, first-hand up person in the comments or in the YouTube or in the Facebook.
Yeah, if somebody wants to win $25, all you got to do is say me or raise your hand. We're on a little bit of a delay with YouTube. But
yeah,
there you go. Maybe this is a good time while we're waiting to mention we're going to be on a different platform next week. We're going to be given all the problems we've been having with Crowdcast. We're going to be trying out a new platform called StreamYard next week. The good news is you can still watch on Crowdcast. You can still watch on YouTube. You can still watch on Facebook. So we'll still have all those streams going. But the whole show should hopefully be a lot smoother. And trivia should be a lot smoother as well. But I guess we'll see what happens.
So, yeah, I don't know about that. Take it easy with
nothing
that.
Will change for any listeners. Nothing will change for any viewers. It'll be all the same. Hopefully, though, fingers crossed, it'll just be a better show.
Yeah.
Well, nobody's raising their hands, so we got a hand up from Ben the Border Collie.
Yeah, Ben the Border Collie.
I'll bring you in, but please put on some headphones. Otherwise, there's going to be a horrible, horrible echo. But I'm going to invite you in right now. So, do it quick. There you go.
This is exciting.
Yes, it is exciting. Just to reemphasize, it's just going to be a little different. We'll probably ask for some volunteer for trivia. Oh, he doesn't have headphones nearby. Oh no.
Straight right. Bully's like, don't worry about it.
No, it's terrible.
The echo is really
all
bad.
All right, we're just gonna do it in the comments. That's fine. So take it away, Pete. Do it in the comments. Ben, answer in the comments.
All right. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend, Burke Bacharach, RIP. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. What DC comic is going from a limited series to ongoing? Very excited about this. This is a comic that we have reviewed and love very much. Is it A, Poison Ivy? B, Creepy Dude is in the background, but you see them everywhere? Or is it C, Clint Howard?
He says Poison Ivy in the comments.
So there you go. All right. Yeah, that is correct. I'm very excited about Poison Ivy getting an ongoing series. It's been not only super tight bananas art-wise, but a great, great story to boot.
It's been super tight. Been writing. Banana writing. Bananas.
Bananas writing, for sure. Yeah. Question number two. Scott Snyder has a line of new titles at IDW, and it is called blank. Is it A, Dark Spaces, B, You're Not the Father, or C, Jerry Springer?
I'm going to say You're Not the Father. Is that it?
No, that is not correct. It's Dark Spaces. The Dark Spaces is the name of the imprint.
Oh, he says A seems correct. There you go.
Yeah, there we go. Is the name of his imprint on IDW that's going to be launching a bunch of new titles.
It already launched, man.
All right, well, yeah, it's already out there, so get off my nuts about it. All right, here we go. Question number three. For the 30-year anniversary of Maximum Carnage, who is Carnage facing for the first time? Is it A, Miles Morales, B, Honeysuckle Rose, or C, Willie Nelson?
Ooh. Man, this is a really tough one because I have always wanted to see Carnage go up against Willie Nelson.
Yeah, yeah.
He says Honeysuckle Miles.
Yeah, he's correct. Miles Morales is correct, so that should be a fun showdown in the Honeysuckle Rose. It's a fun Willie Nelson reference.
Hey, there you go. Congratulations, Ben the Border Collie. You got a $25 gift card to either Midtown Comics or Long John Silver's. Just shoot us an email at comicbookclublive@gmail.com and we'll get that off to you. Pete, what was your secret movie?
Yeah, and of course, Kevin got it, which was impressive off of, he got it off of Clint Howard, so he got it early on. I'm talking about the 1999 hit comedy Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Oh, there we go. Now, as we all know, New Comic Book Day is tomorrow, unless you're DC, in which it's today. But what are you looking forward to, Pete? What do you want to check out in the old comic book shop?
I tell you, there's a lot of great comics coming out tomorrow. I'm looking forward to Art Brute number 3 and House of Slaughter number 12.
Great choices. I am going to throw out there Shirtless Bear Fighter number 7, which is the last issue of that title. Shirtless Bear Fighter 2 number 7, excuse me.
Yeah, volume 2.
Yes, there you
issue
go.
Issue number 7.
Very, very funny. Has maintained its premise so well. I've been constantly shocked, very curious to see how it all wraps up. And speaking of not exactly wrapping things up, but very curious to check out Fantastic Four number 4 from Marvel as well tomorrow, since we're finally going to get a reveal of what went on and why the Fantastic Four left New York City. All of those titles.
New York City.
We're going to find out. All of those titles are going to be in our Stack podcast that rolls out Wednesday, 9 a.m., both the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Rich Davis for coming on. Be sure to check out Prometheus and Change that comes out June from Red 5, which you can pre-order at your comic book shop right now. Also, CC Affity, check out Mythfall, launching on Kickstarter very soon. Very fun book as well. Next week on the show, Justin Cirdulu is going to be here to talk about The Ballad of Gia and Frankie, and Eric Radvin is going to be here to talk about Lady Dark. Hopefully with the new platform, it doesn't take everything down, but I guess we'll see what happens. It's a crapshoot.
And hopefully Justin will be back for Disneyland. Hopefully,
I don't know. If I was at Disneyland, I certainly would. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, happy birthday, Stray Bullet. Ease off the soup and good night.
Take care of yourself out there. Thanks for listening. Kimmy Gaywood, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.